Our next presenter will be Ms. Darlene Florence, and she's going to be speaking on evaluating the interaction of agronomic practices for maximum yield in corn. Darlene, the podium is yours.
Thank you, Robert, for the introduction. Before I get started, I know my name's the only one on the slide here, but certainly this project was not done alone. Robert Mullen, actually sitting right here, helped set up with the project, and Clay Diger was instrumental in getting the project in the field, and also Pierce Paul was our fungicide person, a plant pathologist. So one of the reasons that we'd like to look at the interaction of multiple agronomic factors is that with our current nitrogen recommendation, we look at Liebig's law of the minimum, which every soil fertility student learns on about day three. And the idea with this is that that the achievable yield is dictated by the most efficient nutrients. So in this, it's this barrel stave concept that we've all seen for many, many years. And that so in this example, the nitrogen would be limiting. And so the idea is that if you increase the nitrogen, that will increase yield, but increasing any of the other nutrients will have no effect. But that once you increase nitrogen, then water would be limiting, and you'd have to increase each stave until they were all equal and all insufficient factors. But as we've seen from the field, this is not entirely true, that we have a crop yield. This is a conglomerate of a number of different studies that we've done at Ohio State. And so you can see that as crop yield will increase on this axis, and we have a fertilizer nitrogen rate increasing on this axis, and that when both water and P are limiting, that we have a relatively low yield across all of our nitrogen rates, and that when you remove the water as a limiting factor and have only P limiting, that you increase your yield over both yielding, and it increases even further when you have neither limiting. And so what this says, at least to us and as our group as we were looking at things, is that we need to begin to look at multiple limiting factors and need to move beyond the reductionist views and move beyond thinking of soil fertility as a single factor, but look at them as a multitude in a more complex system. And then that led to this research into the interaction of land management. But one of the things you think about when you think about doing multiple factors in a traditional randomized complete block design, which is almost exclusively what we run, is that if you do 4 N rates and you do 2 K rates, then you have 18 treatments per rep, and we traditionally run 4 reps in Ohio, and I think that's fairly common across, that you end up with 32 plots across 4 reps, which isn't anything ridiculous. It will take a little bit of time, but it's not terrible. But then if you were to add 2 fungicide choices on top of that, you end up with 16 reps per treatment and 64 plots. And I can say from having been out in the field on Friday with I think we had closer to 32. We had 32 or 40 plots. That makes for a very long day in the field, and I really was glad we didn't have 64 plots, or I'd probably still be in the field. So you can see that these factors get very large very quickly. There's a statistical design that's come out of the University of Illinois. Fred Bielow and company have started working with it, and we borrowed this design from him. And so we call it the emission trial method. I think that's the main name that it goes by. But it has some limitations that the factor choices must be binary. So you either have to have a low or not high, or an applied and not applied. And the way that it reduces, and part of the reason it's called the emission trial, is that rather than having all 64 plots, which I'll show in just a moment, it carefully goes through and reduces the number of trials you have, and you only have representative sets. And so the idea is that it's used for more of a screening tool to see what interactions are going on that particular field as we think more about site-specific recommendations and move away from more of the blanket recommendations. The other really nice thing about it for the statisticians in the room, and I know there's one sitting behind me, that you still have the power of ANOVA, but you do a contrast with it rather than setting it up as a PROC GLM. And so, as I mentioned, not all the treatments are represented. So if we go back to our nitrogen rate, potassium rate, and fungicide, that we start with all factors being low or not applied. So in this case, we have a low rate of nitrogen, a low rate of potassium, and a not applied fungicide. And then you stepwise increase one factor while keeping the other, in this case two, low or not applied. And then you bring that one, the nitrogen, back down to the original level, turn on or up this one, and keep the other two low. So you're only manipulating one factor at a time, and this consists of one half of your treatment. And so when you do the contrast, you compare these three treatments to this low factor, and you can see where you have significant yield increases or decreases. And then the second half of your study consists of having all factors high or applied. And so here we start with the high rate of nitrogen, the high rate of potassium, and the application of fungicide. And then we stepwise turn each factor down similarly to what we had done earlier. And so the really glorious thing, especially if you're out in the field, is that you go from your 64 plots, which we had with our traditional randomized complete block design, and you cut that in half and go down to 32 plots. And especially, you know, as you're traveling to different locations, we work mainly with two different locations across the state, and then the one in our town, as we'll see in a minute, and each of them are about 2 hours away. And if you're in the field 6, 8, 10 hours, that makes for, you know, quite a long day. So having 32 plots to be able to see what's going on is a really great thing. So what we looked at, we actually evaluated five different agronomic factors, which in a randomized complete block design would be like a bazillion plots. And on research farms and even on cooperative farms, that finding that sort of size land is quite difficult, and reducing the variability of the soil across that size land is also quite difficult. So we looked at nitrogen rate. We did a 220 and 300 pounds per acre. And these are fairly common rates for Ohio. And then for our potassium rate, we did a soil test. And our soil test level was above the critical level. It was somewhere near 155 parts per million, which is more than significant. And so we did our low rate as zero, and our high rate we did 250. And then the seeding rates that we chose represent a lower rate for Ohio and a higher rate for Ohio. Most producers will plant in between those two ranges, generally closer to the 30,000. And then we did a fungicide application at V5 and a fungicide application at VT. And I should note that this is on corn. So here is the layout. You can see that we have treatment one represents all of our options as being low or not applied. Because we had two fungicide applications, we sort of futzed with things a little bit, and we considered the yes for the VT to be the low and the no for the VT to be high. So that's where we did our stepwise here. And then treatment 8 represents our high. And so this batch of treatments gets compared with treatment 8, and this batch of treatments gets compared with treatment 1. And then we can start getting to. So Northwest, as I mentioned, we're located in the northeast part of the state in Wayne County, which is the OARDC. So Ohio is neighbored by Lake Erie, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia. And then I didn't have enough room to write Pennsylvania there because I think it would have been quite long. But that's our other neighbor. So we had our Northwest research branch in Wood County, and that is historical lake plain soils, so they're very poorly drained and they're more of a clay loam. And then Clark County is down here, and that's one of our other branches, and they have a lot of variability to their soils because of the way the glacier receded and the different moraines developed. And then in Worcester, we also have glacier soils, but they're a little bit more uniform. So in 2010, we did not see yield differences at either site, either at the Northwest. It was quite a dry year there, especially at tasseling, which is, those of us that work with corn know that that's a super critical time to have water and to have rain. So we had quite low yields. And then we had highly variable yields at the Western Research Station, which led to a very large LSD. So the data here, I just wanted to show you for Northwest that these are lower yields. We usually get closer to 150, 200 bushels. And so the LSD here was only about 8. And we just, there weren't very many trends, but there wasn't anything significant, and there really weren't a whole lot of trends to talk about. But there were a couple of trends at Western. Again, there wasn't any significant difference between any of the plots since the LSD was about 25 or so. But we can see that we start with about 174 bushels here for the low treatment. And when we increased the nitrogen rate to a high rate, we got 199, which is an increase trend, although, again, not quite significant. And we can see as a kind of a second check that when we took away that high rate of nitrogen, that we, again, decreased. And we can see that those trends hold for most of the rest of the data. And then likewise, we can see that there's a fairly similar yield from the high series of rates to the low series of rates, which we kind of found interesting and is something to think about as we move with recommendations to growers and input costs and those sort of ideas. And again, similar to the low trend, we can see that there was when we decreased the rate of nitrogen, that we had this decrease in yield, so that we had a similar response with both treatments. And so that trend stayed fairly significant throughout the year. I would love to show you 2011 data, but as most of you know, we had a very, very wet year in Ohio and most of the Midwest. And so generally, we look at planning somewhere in late April and early May. And as you can see, it rained. This is in inches. I apologize for those not familiar with that system. That it rained quite significantly there. There were a handful of farmers that were able to get corn planted in this week. We were not one of them. And then this little batch where it was didn't rain, that the rain events previously had been so significant that it didn't. So we didn't get our corn. We got our corn in right at the end of here. And then in this, this is the weather data out of the Worcester Station. It was similar throughout the state. So I didn't see reason to show all three. And also, we had temperatures that were low. We generally try not to plant corn until the soil temperature gets above 60 Fahrenheit, and that didn't happen until about the 11th of May. And so that was a little bit later, again, than we usually have. So we're hoping to harvest in the next 3 or 4 weeks. The corn still hasn't blacklayered. It hasn't reached physiological maturity, and we're looking at some cold, wet weeks. So we're really just hoping to get it out of the ground before it freezes. But again, there weren't significant differences present at either one, again, likely due to the dry year, especially during tasseling, and that the nitrogen, there was a strong trend there, but again, it wasn't significant, and we didn't see any other strong trends. And with that, I will take some questions if there's time.
We have time for about one question. Yes, Alan.
I'm a bit curious on the yields in the low set of treatments. The standard combination was basically the same as the standard combination with your high set of treatments. In the high treatments, when you started omitting things, the yields went down to an even lower level. In the low treatments, when you added more nitrogen, the yields jumped up. Now, is there an explanation for that? It looks like the high level of inputs was actually detrimental.
Yeah, we noticed that too. We'd tossed a few things around with that. that it had maybe had to do some of the variability with the soil, that it might have had something to do with some of the way the fungus, the timing of the fungicide application. But we were really, because there weren't any significant differences and it was mostly just trends, we were going to wait till we got this year's data in to see what significance there were, and then to be able to look back at those trends and see if there are significance in this year's data to be able to look back at those trends. Because right now we're all kind of scratching our heads too a little bit.
Maybe that's all just noise.
It might very well be. Yeah, it might very well be noise. So that's why we're waiting this year before we say things, for sure.
Thank you, Darlene.
Thank you, sir.